The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
You don't need these now. I shouldn't have put them out. It's for the end of the day. Or I put them out so people who leave early could pick them up. Okay. I'd like us to do a little sitting, but before we do the sitting, as a backdrop or for the sitting. So before lunch, I talked about this issue of unwise attention and wise attention. And it deserves a lot of attention. It's a wise thing to pay attention to. That what we pay attention to has a big impact on doubt, uncertainty, or confidence. And it's possible to pay attention to things that are not very wise to pay attention to. So certain religious goals that some you find in religious circles maybe are confusing. And to set yourself up in some really high idealistic goal maybe is unwise, doesn't elicit confidence, maybe it causes doubt to arise. And Buddhism has its share of lofty goals. And sometimes, even if they're true goals, it can be unwise to focus on them, or unwise how we focus on them. To focus on them is so. Now, one of the things that the Buddha emphasized a few different places is that it's unwise to spend a lot of time focusing on oneself, in the sense of, you know, meditation in a sense is focusing on oneself, you know, paying attention to one's breath, one's body, one's feelings, what's going on here. But that's different than paying attention to one's conceitful self, the one's self-image, the way we want to represent ourselves to the world, all these ideas, constellation of ideas we have around who we really are, and who we've really been, and who we really will become. And the suggestion for the Buddha is that focusing too much on the true self, or the ultimate self, or this whole idea of self, lends itself to uncertainty, lends itself to thinking unwisely. So then the question is there something... and so you can probably think of your own list of things which are unwise to pay attention to. So in this focusing on self, the conceitful self, it can be unwise to spend a lot of time fixating on oneself as a victim. That itself is counterproductive. It's not really helpful to do it, and lends itself to a certain kind of uncertainty or doubt. Or it's unhealthy to focus on oneself as being... the great savior of all of humanity, or at least of mankind, and because certain kinds of strong, conceited ideas of who I am, who I need to be, are actually quite fragile, and so to hold it in place, we have to bump up against life and reality constantly shifting and changing, challenging a fixed idea of this is who I need to be. So it can be, you know, I need to be smart. I need to be the smartest one. I need to be beautiful. I need to be the most beautiful one here. I need to be the kind one, the kindest one here. I need to be, I'm that kind of person. To fixate and focus on this is who I am, I need to maintain this and be this, creates a very fragile way of being in the world. And so are there other ways, other ways of paying attention to our life that isn't through the filter of some unrealistic goal or ideal, or through some kind of fixated idea of self that we might have? And so the Buddha suggested something which I think is quite profound, but this profundity is missed in its simplicity often. And when the Buddha was asked or described what it is to pay wise attention, and so and hopefully you'll see when I say this, or figure out how this can lead to confidence or overcoming doubt. He said the way the Buddha defined wise attention is to notice things, notice your experience, whatever experience you're having, notice it from the point of view of the suffering or the stress that's there as part of it. If there is suffering as part of it, then become aware of the cause of the suffering or the stress. And then notice the possibility of letting go of that. And then if you can't let go of it automatically, which is often hard to do, then there's a path of practice, a course of practice you can take that supports the possibility of letting go. And if I'm sitting meditating, and I'm thinking, this meditation experience is not going the way it's supposed to go. And then you feel kind of down, stressed out about my poor meditation practice. So you can continue focusing on that, paying attention to it as my poor meditation practice. I am a lousy meditator. What a terrible person I am. They shouldn't allow me into IMC. And in fact, I think next time I'll sit by the back door so no one notices me. And because, you know, I'm just really can't do anything right. So that kind of train of thinking is not very productive. What would be more productive would be to look and say, oh, where's the suffering here? Oh, it actually hurts to see myself as a bad meditator, to feel bad about my meditation. Where does it hurt? How does it hurt? And is there a cause for that hurt? And in particular, is there something I'm holding on to and clinging to? Am I clinging on to a self-image, the need to have a self-image that is a good meditator, a successful meditator? Do I have a self-image of someone who needs to do things only that are successful? And so if I'm not being successful, then I'm letting myself down. I'm holding on to a should. There's a right way of doing things. I'm not doing the right way, therefore I am bad. Or things are, you know. So it's possible to see the belief that we're holding on to, the ideas we're holding on to, the feelings we might be holding on to, the clinging to. And if that can be seen clearly enough, then it's possible to see that it's not necessary to cling to those things. There's no requirement to cling to a self-image of yourself as a meditator, a good meditator, a bad meditator. The clinging of it is optional. So you see the suffering, you see the clinging to the suffering, and you clearly see it's optional. And then you can, let's say, in an ideal world, you can let go of it. You let go of the clinging to maybe your self-image. And then the suffering around being a bad meditator drops away. You still might be sitting in meditation very distracted, not getting concentrated. That's true. But you're not adding over that an overlay of suffering that arises because we're holding on to a particular image of what it's supposed to look like. I don't know if that was a good example, but I'm trying to give you an example of how these Four Noble Truths can operate in principle or in practice. We use it to look at so it as an alternative to many of the ways, usual ways of thinking about things. The encouragement is look at whatever's happening through this framework of the Four Noble Truths. The advantage of this is hopefully points directly back at what's the key operating phenomena, or the key activity that's happening, that's the cause of you feeling suffering. The idea that I'm suffering because I'm a bad meditator, you know, point that if looking at it that way, it looks at, then I have to look at ideas, what meditation is, and I have to get all the manuals, meditation manuals out, and measure myself next to other people, and I have to do, you know, and kind of see how I'm going to improve, and I, you know, maybe after 10 years of meditation, I can get up to the right level, and then I don't feel bad about myself anymore. That's one approach. Another approach is to look at the clinging around being a good meditator and let go of the clinging. That's a suggestion is that's an easier route. Look at it directly. So where's the clinging? Where's the holding? It's meant to be a much more simpler approach. Now, the Buddha said that's wise attention. That's not going to lead to a lot of complications of theory, of metaphysics, of religious idealism. It's very practical, immediate. Where's the clinging? What am I holding on to here? Some people hold on to religion, to their spirituality, and they cling to it, and it causes suffering. Some people resist spiritual practice, and that resistance is a form of clinging. That's the source of the suffering. So why is attention being defined by paying whatever you pay attention to? It isn't like you're denying anything, but notice that aspect of the present moment that has to do with these, with suffering, with clinging, with the release of clinging, and to a path to the release of clinging. If you get start getting a sense of that particular exercise, that particular orientation to looking at our life, then hopefully very quickly you can see how practical it is and have confidence that it's worthwhile to look at your experience that way. And then if someone asks you, what's your spiritual life about? You don't have to take recourse to some very complicated ideas. But maybe you don't really understand so well. I'm going to become fully enlightened. What's enlightenment? I'm going to become an arhat. What is that supposed to be? Strange idea. I'm going to become one with the universe. I'm going to become, whatever. At the last retreat I taught at Spirit Rock, there was a person who had grown up in a very strict religious tradition. And literally, kind of, his mind swung dramatically with great suffering. He said, between being God and being the devil. Because that was the polarities that his mind just was kind of latched onto. So rather than looking at all these ideas of devil and all these gods and justifying, you should look at the holding onto it, the gripping, the holding. And it's impossible to let go of that. So the simplicity of just letting go and having confidence that it's worthwhile to let go. That it's not necessary to, with white knuckles, to hold on to things, but to have confidence in letting go. Or to have no doubt that it's appropriate to let go. It's okay not to hold on to things. And one of the key insights and key forms of confidence that hopefully comes with Buddhist practice is this confidence that it's okay not to cling, not to hold on. And that confidence hopefully comes from understanding how these Four Noble Truths actually are so practical and immediate in our life. So now we can sit. And now you can sit with wise attention. So as you sit here, and whatever meditation practice you do, to hold it, in some light way, in the framework of noticing how you might suffer, or have stress, or have anxiety, or something, have some unhappiness, and say, what am I holding on to? What am I clinging to this? And is it possible to begin the process of letting go? The mind wanders off into thought. After 5 minutes, you notice that. And the first reaction is upset. What are you clinging to have that upset? Is it possible just to notice the mind wandered off? Notice that, and without any upset, without any clinging to anything, come back. There's physical pain, boredom, impatience. Many things might happen. Does it represent holding and clinging to something? What is that? And what happens when you let go? So we'll sit quietly for a while. So the Four Noble Truths are a wonderful protection, because if you keep the Four Noble Truths close at hand, then as you meditate, you won't suffer because of the meditation. What I mean is that all kinds of things, challenging experiences can happen in meditation, but you're always ready to look and see, where am I clinging to something here? What am I clinging to? Is the discomfort I'm feeling, the suffering I'm feeling in this situation, does it represent some kind of clinging, and can I let go of that? What is it? What's going on there? And it's a great protection, no matter what you're doing. It's not necessarily easy to ferret out the suffering or the actual what it is, or the cause of it, the clinging or the grasping that might be part of it. The degree to which you can do it, it's a great protection. And no matter what you do, that you're not going to suffer because of it. Now, it's possible to suffer and then say, oh boy, I'm suffering, I'm a Buddhist, I'm supposed to do this Four Noble Truths stuff, and if I do it well, then I wouldn't suffer, and now I'm just doing it terrible, and I'm suffering even more. The idea is to take what is happening and be very simple with it. So if you are grasping and clinging to something and you can't let go of it, then we don't add another layer of clinging on top of that. Then we're just, it's just the clinging that's happening. It's unfortunate, perhaps, there's some suffering there, but let's not add another layer of suffering on top of that. Let's just be very simple. Okay, here's a meditator who's clinging. That's all it is. So we say, things as they are is a kind of very kind of key concept in Buddhism. Things as they are, taking refuge in things as they are, coming back to things as they are, and the simplicity of things as they are, as opposed to the complexity of ideals and lofty goals and all kinds of other things. So I've done my best in the few minutes I had to kind of try to present this idea of wise and unwise attention, and how wise attention involves the Four Noble Truths, understanding our experience from that point of view. And now what I'd like to do is to turn it over to you to fill in the picture, or to explore that, or to grapple with that, struggle with that, or try to understand better how this might work for you or sit for you. And so one way to look at it is to look at the things that, the doubts that you might have around practice, the uncertainties you might have around practice, the hesitations, the indecisiveness you might have, and then apply the Four Noble Truths to it. Can you see how the Four Noble Truths, this understanding, this framework, can help you find your way through the doubt, through the indecision, through the uncertainty? Or can you find certainty through the Four Noble Truths? And one of the key places to find certainty is you find certainty that, oh, I know that if I grasp, I'll suffer. I don't know about all these different states of meditation you can attain and this and that about meditation. I don't know about all the different aspects of my meditation, but I do know that if I grasp, and so there can be, you can find certainty right there. So this framework of the Four Noble Truths, what light does that cast on the topic of doubt, uncertainty, indecision that might come up as a hindrance in meditation? So that's a very broad topic. But I was hoping that it'd bring you that question, that maybe in your discussion you can kind of take it someplace, move with it, and kind of explore something and see what comes up with you. Are you guys game for that? Is enough to go on, to kind of feel your way in the dark with it? So what I had in mind is so that everyone has a chance to kind of explore and discuss, but also to have a chance to listen to others and go around, is to have groups of four again. And does that seem okay to you? So groups of four, and And so the topic is, you know, this thing, wise and unwise attention. It's a very broad thing, how that comes into play. But more specifically, then how the Four Noble Truths, how that provides wise attention. How does that provide wise attention in your life, in your practice, in your meditation, and in relationship to doubt? So it's a very broad, open question, and you can take it where you want to go. Okay? So why don't you form groups of four, and let's see if we are multiples of four here. If not, it'll help less people to maybe figure out what to do. Okay, so are we back? Okay, so we'll take a break in a few minutes, and then you can pick up the sheet. So if you take it early, then you have more time to do the exercises, and you'll have a harder time getting a good grade. I'll have a higher expectation of you. because then I don't have much to grade you against. So let's see. So any comments about that you'd like to make?
I think I was too
preoccupied. It helps to talk.
It helps to talk.
It helps to talk in microphones.
Thank you, Mr. Microphone. It helps to talk and to listen. Just the humanity. Otherwise, people, we see you once in a while and you're gone. And it just helps to, oh, there's a friend of face. Yeah, you were in the group. Yeah, it helps.
Great.
I think we found it to be a very difficult topic, and our approach to it was maybe not a lot of clarity.
Your discussion you had, okay.
I think the Buddha was very, very wise. Those Four Noble Truths apply to so much. And it just is sort of this umbrella to every aspect of our lives, that if you can understand that there is suffering, and if there is suffering present, that's a wake-up to perhaps seeing if you can do it some other way. And if there is joy and equanimity in your practice, then that encourages you to continue to do it some more. And for my own self, I'm trying to take in the fact that I can sometimes do that for a stretch of time, and to really stop and take in the fact that I'm cutting a new groove here, and not immediately fall back into it's about time or the old voices that say, well, how long it's taken, or how, you know, just right now it's over here, and that's good. And to stop and take in that level of confidence about ability to continue to do it, continue the practice.
Beautiful, thank you.
The whole day I've become, it seems like a growing realization that I've been clinging to a view of confidence that is just mental and lofty goal kind of stuff. That, you know, I'll start with a doubt such as, I can't concentrate well. And then I'll have a period where I'm thinking, oh, I can concentrate well. And I'll equate that with confidence. And it's that I'm seeing more and more, and the group experience helped me even more to see how this is just a lot of the time just mental spinning, that I can do it isn't for me really. It's just very fragile. It again sets up a lofty goal kind of thing, where then if I experience distraction and thinking again, I think, oh, no, I can't do it. And so I'm seeing the suffering that's there in the I can do it.
Beautiful. So there's something profound about not holding the idea that I can do it.
Yeah, even that.
Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's different to just, yeah, rather than think about it.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, I had a feeling that the afternoon discussion was much more lively. And I felt reluctant to ring the bell to end because it seemed like you guys, seemed like the whole room was on a roll, just talking and into something. So you're not saying much, but let's meet that behind you.
When you use the word certainty, I think I got a little, that kind of hardens in my mind to use that, because I feel like I've been seeing recently how I suffer because I feel like, oh, I already know that. So keeping an open mind and the word certainty kind of
takes that away. Great. It's great to hear. So beginner's mind, open mind. But in contrast to that, there's a kind of uncertainty that's healthy, and there's a kind of uncertainty which makes us waver. As a hindrance, it has to do with the wavering uncertainty, not the uncertainty that opens possibilities. So I can see how certainty provides closure that is not helpful.
So we were talking about certainty and like that, and I was talking about how where I am right now in my life is sometimes a feeling of being lost, and how that I was complaining to somebody and feeling a little depressed and talking about being lost a couple of months ago. And what I came to today, or actually what I'm coming to today, is that if you know you're lost, you're not lost. And the actual being lost isn't being lost. It's just not knowing what's going to happen next, and it's nothing to be depressed about. As a matter of fact, whichever way I decide to travel is the way I'll go. So that's kind of what I was getting today, and I'm really grateful for that.
Great, thank you. It's beautiful.
Well, mine's kind of confusing, and when I was talking, at least to me, and when I was talking about it in the group, it made sense, and now I'm going to try to articulate it, and I'm not feeling clear, but I was reflecting that one of the areas I notice a lot of my suffering is in this kind of victim thinking of nothing ever goes right for me. It's got deep, long past origins. So I was saying, that's the suffering, I see that. Well, what am I clinging to there that I could work on letting go of? And I forgot what we said.
Then let go of needing to know.
Okay.
One more? Did you have? Okay, well, what I introduced this afternoon was meant to be, I don't know if provocative is the right word, but to give you something to think about and work with, and not something to finished result, but rather something to kind of carry with you now and wonder about. So I have one more thing I'd like to do today after our break. And that's to look more specifically at practicing mindfulness in relationship to this hindrance of doubt. So let's take a break and start again at 3:00.